and welcome to episode 49 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Kitty.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Eve.
Today we'll be talking about board game parties, the pros and cons, the big, the small. They seem like a great idea, and we'll talk about what it takes to be successful with them. But first, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Jiljam, Shane Poole, George Gia, and Adam Harrison. Also, a huge thank you to all our other patrons as well.
Thank you, Kitty, and welcome back. You can say something.
Hi, I'm here. It's been so long, I forgot how to do this. Yes.
And we have your sister.
I'm Eve, Kitty's sister.
Pleasure. Now, we should plug your guys' show right off the top so I don't forget. Yeah.
We have a podcast that Kitty and I do called Fresh Baked Books, where we read a book and bake a recipe inspired by the book.
Yep. So if you are entertained by their antics, because I expect this to be a very interesting show.
Thank you.
You can go listen to them on that show. Now, we'll start off with saying Josh is missing. We think he was kidnapped in Nicaragua. Hopefully that's not true.
Yeah, we really hope not.
He was supposed to be back yesterday. I haven't heard from him since then, so I'm just assuming they got delayed. Kitty, on the other hand, came back yesterday.
There was a lot of weather.
So, yeah. So we're just assuming that his plate is delayed. But Kitty came back, and Eve was planning on being here. Yes. And I'm like, this works out just swimmingly. So, everyone... I'll tweet when I hear from Josh, so nobody has to be concerned.
Also, if I accidentally call myself Josh at some point, it's because Chris didn't fix the show notes, and I literally just read what they say.
This may be a last-minute change. It's all good. Let's see. Let's get into announcements. The 50 versus 52 debate rages on. Josh isn't here, so he won't know that so far 52 is winning.
But I'm excited, though.
I'm
on the 52 side.
Well, so this is what I realized. I realized if you're celebrating an anniversary, then everyone's right. 52 is correct. But we're not celebrating a one-year anniversary. We're celebrating 50 episodes. But Sam had the best idea. He's like, let's just celebrate both. And he said, let's celebrate both in 51. But we're going to celebrate 50 next week because I don't have a show topic. We just have questions, and that's how we're going to handle that. And at Gen Con... The Gen Con live show will be the day after our one-year episodes. So our episode zero dropped on August 17th. August 18th is our live show. So that'll be our one-year celebration. So that's how I'm getting away with this. Technically, that'll be episode 53. But again, it's all nebulous.
After.
Yeah. We'll make a big deal of it in episode 52 as well.
Perfect.
Because
we'll
not?
Make so many big deals.
Yeah, we can just keep it going.
Yeah, what else do we have to talk about? Let's 10 episodes around episode 50. We should just, that's all we should talk about. New giveaway. This is the last week to enter. So if you want to enter, email me at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com with the subject July giveaway. If you include a question for our 50th episode, you'll get some bonus entries in there as well. June 1st is when that deadline is. So as I look at this today.
I am seeing July 28th.
July 28th. We're announcing on June 1st.
So August 1st?
Oh, this is the worst thing
June
ever.
Is the past.
So you remember how you just read the show notes? I type them and then just read them. And actually, that's actually not true at all. I type them and then completely ignore them usually. But so let's start over. July 28th is the deadline to enter. And we're announcing the winner on our August 1st episode, which will be episode 50, which will be the next episode after listening to this one. That feels good. I mentioned our Gen Con Live episode on August 18th. It is half sold out. That means 20 of 40 people.
That's way up from the last time I heard. We're still at 11.
It's double almost.
Whoa.
So, and I'm going to announce here... I've been teasing purging my collection for a while and getting rid of some games. I am going to bring probably a dozen games to that show.
Whoa!
So there will be at least 12 people that walk away with a game.
Wow.
And probably another half a dozen or so that walk away with a t-shirt. So you have a very high percentage chance of walking away with something if you come watch us live.
Everyone will probably get something.
Everyone's going to get something. Nice. At the very least, you're going to walk away with some pins and magnets and stuff.
Yeah.
So everyone's going to get something and... It, yeah,
You should come.
Sure. Definitely.
I got my badge this week in the mail.
I know. It's exciting because now it's sold out. So if you don't have a badge in hand, then
you're out of luck.
Yeah, you're done. Can't come. Wow. Although Friday badges have not sold out. So if you still want to see our show.
Oh, nice.
As far as I know, just the 4-day and the Saturday badges are sold out. So you could still come
Friday
on Friday.
Friday is still available.
Yep.
All right.
It might be worth it for a used board game. Just saying. Also, you get to go to Gen Con, which is a blast. Sydney and I, a friend of ours, Jen, one of our patron supporters and a great friend of ours, offered to let us share a room with her. So it'll be 5 of us in one room, but it's better than the 8 miles away that we were before.
Wow.
So yeah. Thank you, Jen. You're awesome. And you also win a game. I'm going to give you something. Let's go on to Kickstarters. Just a couple. Rolling Empires. So there's now a thread on our Board Game Geek podcast page on Kickstarters Chris should check out, which is tough because every time someone posts something there, I'm like, oh, I should check this out. Yes, I want that. So Rolling Empires is one of those.
This was supposed to be something that made you less likely to spend so much on Kickstarter, I thought.
So there was, we'll get to that. So this one I looked at, this one's cool. It's a fantasy dice building game. This is kind of reminiscent of Dice Masters, but all in a box. So you play a faction, you have dice.
No collectible nature
to it. You have dice, you can buy the dice, it helps you build resources, roll the resources, good to go. This one's only $47 US, $60 in Canadian because it's a Canadian Kickstarter. So I'm like, all right, this is worth a risk. Lots of custom dice, cool stretch goals. So yeah, I'm like, all right, I'll take this risk. I'll do it. If you're interested or if it sounds something interesting, that's Rolling Empires and it has about 3 weeks left. The other one, I don't believe this one was on the thread. I think I just found this one spontaneously. I found it on the Kickstarter report on Board Game Geek. It's called Renegade, and it's a cyberpunk deck building game for 1 to 4 players. So you can do co-op or solo, or I'm pretty sure it's competitive as well. Maybe not. Anyway, you're fighting against supermassive computers or SMCs, and you have to beat their AI, and there's puzzles and things you have to solve and stuff like that. So it looked really cool. I'm a little concerned with this one because there's a ton of things in the box and they're only charging $39 for it, which normally makes me think that this is their first game. They don't know how much it's going to cost to make, and I'm a little nervous, but for $39, it was worth the risk. So I figured I'll give that a shot too.
And with Kickstarter, you never get charged until
the campaign's over.
Oh.
Oh, you get charged before. Yeah.
It's until it successfully funds.
Yes. Yep. Both of these have met their goals, so they'll both fund. They're into stretch goals at this point. So $39, I mean, there's some dice, there's some custom minis, there's some cards. It's a lot for $39, but I think you can do it in quantity. So hopefully they get enough quantity where it's not a big deal.
All right.
And then to answer the quick Kickstarter question, so Terrence actually posted a game, and I took a look at it. And there were a few reasons why I didn't back it. I'm not going to mention the name here. You can go ahead and check out the Board Game Geek thread. Again, it's just the Tabletop Game Talk podcast page. Or you can go to tabletopgametalk.com/BGG. It'll take you right there. But what I'm trying to do is anytime you point something out to me on there, I will either let you know if I'm going to back it or not, and then I'll tell you why. Mm-hmm. For that specific one, the price was a bit high for a first-time publisher. There was very little actual gameplay, and there weren't really any reviews from anybody, no videos or anything like that. So I wasn't prepared to drop $100. Now these guys, they definitely passionate. They had a whole bunch of information about how the game was getting made and over the years and pictures and stuff like that. But a game like that I feel bad because it's sort of what Kickstarter's for. Is look at my dream and help me make it a reality. But at the same time, if I'm going to put $100 towards you, I want to know that your reality is a little closer to actually being a reality.
Yeah.
So anyway, those are the kind of the things I go through. Kitty, get me out of this.
All right, let's go to some feedback about past episodes. If you have feedback about this or any of our previous episodes, email us or go to our Board Game Geek forums easily found at tabletopgametalk.com/BGG.
Eve, you want to try to read this one?
Yes. From Terrence on Burnout. A very cool subject, as I have found myself thinking about a few games like HeroClix and Monster Apocalypse.
Nice.
That I used to play a lot. Now I look at them and just don't want to bother. I think Sydney nailed my feeling exactly when she was talking about Dominion. She played it so much that just getting back to where she was in terms of mastery of the game would be a lot of work, and I'm not sure the time or effort is worth it. And I really liked Josh calling it maxing out rather than burning out. Maxing out is a much broader concept, and I agree you need to really love a game in order to burn out on it. If you don't particularly like a game, it's super easy to max out on it. And the other games max out pretty quickly, too, if there are mechanics like the ones you mentioned for Spyfall, Pandemic Legacy, Mysterium, or Dixit.
Nice work.
Well, she's very good at reading.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm very blind. I'm like, I need my glasses.
Well, I also totally blindsided you with that because I'm like, you're not going to have to read anything. Don't worry. And I'm like, no.
That's, I'm ready.
Yeah. You did it better than...
I did speech in high school.
Nice.
10 years ago. Nice work.
But to Terrence's point, he was talking on game burnout, and I agree with him. I do like the maxing out thing. Sometimes Josh makes good points. You know, Josh,
I
get back
still
soon.
Need to listen to that episode.
Well,
I know. I'm failing at my research.
Yeah. Maybe it was good because you listened to the first one and immediately emailed me.
I did. I was driving like 40 miles to Target, so I had time.
Yeah. I saw this. Chris is wrong. I'm like, Yeah, from Kitty. That makes total sense.
Taboo is like one of my favorite games. I couldn't let it stand.
I thought so. If you haven't listened, we did an episode on word games, mm-hmm. and I misdescribed
Taboo
as catchphrase. But they're very, very similar games.
They really are.
So I just kind of got them mixed in my head. I really love Catchphrase because the modern version of Catchphrase is just a digital thing with a buzzer and a word that pops
up. It's great.
Yeah. You can bring it with you anywhere. And you just kind of pass it around.
It'll actually work great for today's topic.
I was just
going
to say, that's our parents' go-to party game.
Yeah. And I will go out if I'm at like a friend's house or something, I'm visiting out of town, or I'm visiting from out of town. That makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
I'll oftentimes just stop at Target or something and pick up Catchphrase and bring it over.
It's a great gift.
Because ever you're bored, you can just like pass it around and you leave it there. Yes. For the digital thing, I think it's only like $20 or something like that. It's really not bad at all. So it's one of the party games where I can actually get behind. But now they have Heads Up, which is the opposite of Catchphrase. Instead of you being the Catchphrase, you're the only one that knows the word. Heads Up, everyone else knows the word but you.
Which is real. It's another one that we like to play. I made everyone play for Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It's great.
So thank you for your feedback on that. If anyone else has feedback, feel free to email us. Again, tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. Or you can go to the BGG threads. I go through those as well. And otherwise, we are going to have a long conversation regarding board game parties because I think this is just a hot topic. We have tons of input. So we are going to go directly into our topic as soon as I play this music.
In this episode, we're talking about board game parties. What happens when you invite some friends over, put some drinks, snacks, and board games? Well, you just have a board game party, or maybe just a party. Let's see if we can help make sure it's more board game than party.
Yes. So Jason Rodney sent me an email. His first input, so I don't even know if I had the thread up at this point. He just emailed because this is something that was... I'm just going to let him do it. I'm reading his whole email because it sort of summarizes this entire episode, and then we can go from there. Wow, this topic is close to my heart. My board game group meets once every 2 months for 12-hour game days. There is a planning of food, menu, and fighting out which games to be played. On Friday, we all take a day off work and start at 9 a.m. We use the GroupMe app to make this all happen. So that's dedication number one.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. So I'll take, you know, every other first Friday of the month or something, we're going to take that off of work and we're just going to play games all day long. I'm going to set that up. He continues. At first, when we started, our group was small, about 5 people. So our go-to games was like Sentinels of the Multiverse. As our group grew, currently 8 consistent members, but with visitors, we reached like 12 plus. We played a lot of filler games, quick games with small player counts. So eventually everyone got to play together, sort of. One game day, I thought it would be great to play Fortune and Glory, thinking it could handle a large player count. My ambition led to one of the worst game days ever. With 8 players, this is a long and excruciating game. littered with lots of downtime. In the end, I love Fortune and Glory just a little less. Nowadays, we aim for smaller player count games, with more tables running about three games at one time. There is always a game of Munchkin, Smash Up, Magic, or Flux going on. At the end of the day, we could play a party game like Codenames and Burke's Gambit to meet our large group need. There's a player in our group who wants to play games that is good for small to medium player counts, and at its largest, I don't play in those games anymore. I may have lost that here.
You did. It's okay. There is a player in our group who wants to play a game that is good for small to medium player count at its largest.
Got it.
I don't play in those games anymore. Not fun.
Yep. But we can convince him to play at smaller counts, though. It does not stop him from trying. We now play Marvel Legendary, Arcadia Quest, Mice and Mystics, Champions of Midgard, Lords of Waterdeep, and Xenoshift. My philosophy is quality of gameplay. In the end, game day should be one of the best days of the year. So agreed.
Yeah.
Eve, you recently had a board game party.
I did. So I try to do one not nearly as frequently.
Once a year, every other year?
Probably like once every 3 months.
Okay.
One of my best friends lives in Boston, so whenever her and her boyfriend come to town, we kind of do. And we do a night party. We don't get the whole day gameplay. And it started in a group. There were five of us. And the most recent one that Kitty was at, I think there was almost 20 people.
There were 10.
10, 20, it all seems a lot at that much.
We were so close to being able to all play, what did we have? Telestrations.
Telestrations, yes.
We were one book short of the official copy of Telestrations. So there was a team that played, which was actually pretty fun.
It was really fun. It was a really good time. The first night we played Ticket to Ride with the five people.
So wait, this is a two-night thing?
This is a second
second one. So okay. Like 3 months later.
It's like a new tradition.
So five people, Ticket to Ride.
You know, it was fun, but half the group had played it before multiple times and half, myself included, had not played it before. And it was kind of difficult. Like, wait, it was a lot of teaching. So I think that if a game needs a lot of instructions, it's not probably the best for a quick game night.
Okay.
But it was really fun and everybody had a good time. It took a couple hours. The next few board game nights.
I would say you guys are very, very casual gamers. Throw that out there.
Well, my friend's boyfriend that I was talking about, he's a serious gamer. And my friend,
he was listing a lot of games I had never heard of.
Yeah. He was quizzing Kitty and she.
I failed us as a podcast. I'm really sorry.
Now I want to know. I want to take this quiz.
It was, I went and I like looked through them, but, there were a lot of older games, and since I'm newer to the hobby, actually we had just come from Origins, I knew a lot of like the newest games.
Yeah.
And so I was throwing out a bunch of games that he didn't know. He's throwing out a bunch of games I don't know, because I think they've kind of been playing their like core games for a very long time.
Yeah.
So that's why I would say in my group of friends, everybody kind of has their game that they want to play. So that's another struggle for board game nights. Like, what game can we pick that
everyone
either knows or everybody doesn't know, and we're all learning together.
So here's my question, because this is one of the biggest things I have a concern with.
Yeah.
Is when do you get to a size that is beyond... So five people, I just consider that a game night.
Yeah.
Let's get together and play a board game. Yeah. And whatever it is, because those five people are going to be able to play just about any game that you can put on the table. 10 people gets you to a weird number.
10 was a little tricky.
Yes. I think 10 is probably one of the worst possible numbers. Seven is a bad one as well.
Yeah.
But 10, do you split into two groups of five? Do you try to find a party game that can play up to 10, which Telestrations is a good party game, but it only plays to 9. Mm-hmm. Now you have to double up. Do you get a bigger party game? Do you do something like Werewolf? But then you're like voting people out, and that can be an issue. And plus, 10's a little small for a good Werewolf game. Now you could play Resistance. That plays at 10. But then, of course, the 11th person is going to come over right when you start. And
always.
It's like, okay, you can make us snacks as we play this game in front of you.
Yeah.
So when you were playing, was 5 better? Was 10 better? Like, what did you like better?
Well, okay, for 5, we did play the Resistance, and that was just, like, a little too small for a social deduction game, and it, like, was a little tense, and I don't know. And then it was hard playing another game, because I feel like people were very untrustworthy.
Everyone was untrusting,
yeah.
It was a little uncomfortable. And 10, I think it's good. And I think also as a host, it's kind of easy. You can be like, oh, I'm going to step out for this game.
Yeah.
So like for telestrations, it worked. Like I was on the team. So
because
like,
I believe it actually plays 8, but Jesse was grilling. So yeah.
That's where why.
The, yeah.
Yeah. I think that, you know, the more the merrier. You can always do games like you're talking catchphrase and heads up on your phones and then it doesn't really matter. It's definitely harder to keep score the more people there are there, which I think in many ways is more fun.
I never keep score for catchphrase or heads up or any of those games. I think they're just for fun.
I do not like catchphrase all the time. I get a little sick of it, so I have to keep score so the game can end.
So it
finally.
Or not. Yeah. Well, you can do it like, all right, once everyone's done it 3 times,
yeah,
the game is over.
That's perfect.
Or something like that. And that one's like a team-based game too. So
yeah.
It's like, you know, you can say 1st to 5 or yeah. Something along those lines.
Yeah.
So me being the more hardcore gamer amongst the
yeah,
three of us,
you would be like,
when you say catchphrase and you say telestrations and resistance, I'll give you resistance, but yeah. These are party games.
Yeah, these aren't board games.
They're not board games. And when I think like a board game party, mm-hmm. I think something sitting down, setting up pieces. Now, if you had 2 people, like you had Catan over here mm-hmm. and Ticket to Ride over there, and you yeah. split the group into 2 groups, then I'm like, okay, now we're at a board game party.
Yeah.
Was that even feasible with your 10-person group? Did you even think about splitting up?
We did. We had 2 tables set up, but it was more a party.
Uh-huh.
They didn't really want to split up.
I think a couple of the people there were not as into the gaming idea, and that can be really frustrating.
Yeah.
If you throw a party with the idea of, hey, we're getting together to play board games, because I actually, straight fresh from Origins, brought a bunch of games. I yeah. brought Century Spice Road, and mm-hmm. I can't remember what else, but I had 3 or 4 games that were really fun games. No, I didn't bring Tournament at Camelot. Uh-huh. I did not think this would be the crowd for that. Because okay. that one is very rule-heavy. I was looking more for...
easy to teach.
New,
stuff.
Easy to teach, mm-hmm. Fun, quick to play. Because that's, I think, really important for games where you're splitting the group. Mm-hmm. Is they have to play in enough time that you feel like you can mix the groups and play another game with different people. So you feel like you're yeah. mixing with the whole party. But there were a few people who had maybe invited themselves or maybe were coming without the idea that this is for sitting down and playing games. It was
yeah.
much more party than board game this time, which isn't always the case. Sometimes it's like, we're going to be serious and we're going to sit down and we're going to like all take this really seriously.
Well, you can have a middle ground though, right?
Yeah. I was at a party recently too where... it was a game night, and Clue was the game of choice, and everybody took Clue really seriously.
Tournament Clue. Dun,
it,
dun, dun.
It really was. There were 3 games of Clue going on at 3 different tables.
Now, okay.
And that was fun, but that was, like, intense.
So this is one thing I did not put down as a bullet point to even talk about, but I love that idea where, okay, everyone's coming over. We're going to play Pick Your Game.
Yeah.
Even Clue. Sure, pick that game. Mm-hmm. But you can pick any game. We pick Plague Inc. I'm looking at some new games I have here. Rexen, which, thank you, Christy. We're definitely going to do that giveaway.
I saw Chris email you and be like, oh, we were going to play it, but we didn't get to it. And I was like, yes.
Oh, I
because I was going to be... you emailed her that you didn't.
At that point, I hadn't. But then
You've
I tweeted.
I'm so jealous. I saw this email when I was in Minnesota and I was like, they better not play without me.
So when you get this game, this is a little bit of a tangent, but it's going to feed back, I promise. When you get this game, you get the ability to invite 3 people to buy it, or you can buy it for them.
Oh.
And that's the only way you can get it is someone buys it for you or gives you an invitation to buy it. So it's kind of like this exclusive game nice. That you have to like set up. So we're going to actually give away our 3 abilities on our next contest. Spoiler alert, this will start on episode 52 or 3 or something around there. But in any case, this would be an interesting game. So you have 4 copies of it and you would say, all right, everyone come over. We're having a Rexen night. It's not a board game night. It's like, that's what we're playing. We're setting up the different tables. Everyone's playing the same game. And we're just at different tables and broken up. But you can do that with pretty much anything. Okay, Catan night. You know, Kitty, mm-hmm. bring your copy of Catan. I have my copy of Catan. Eve, you bring your copy of Catan. And then we have the same game played at all the tables. It almost feels like it's easier to get people to separate if you're all playing the same thing.
I think it totally is, because people feel left out if there's something going on.
Especially if there's one game that's like the new game that everyone wants to try.
Definitely.
And it's like, oh, somebody's going to have to sit down and play Catan while everyone else plays Raxan.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You don't want to, like, that's not fun. You either have to have enough time that you can switch then and everyone gets a turn to play the new game, but I like the idea of everyone's playing the same game. It almost feels like a tournament at that point, too, and it's like all the winners go to one table and all the losers go to the other, Bunko style.
Yeah. Well,
and so Raxan is a co-op game, but you could play that in such a way saying, okay, this is the easy table, medium table, hard table.
Yeah.
You know, where do you want to be? Where are we going to be? And then you can compare notes. It's like, oh, this happened and this hostile got away and you can talk about stories that are this shared experience, even though you were in a different table.
Yeah.
This is what happened to us versus not. And then for something like Arena of the Gods, going to be given away on our next show, this makes a great tournament style game because you can play four players and you can have multiple tables going on. And then the winner of each table is they get together and then everyone's watching the final climactic battle of it.
Yeah.
And then you start over and do it again.
It also is difficult too when all the games play different lengths. So.
Yes.
Somebody sitting there like, okay, we've been done for 20 minutes.
Yep. That's when, I can't remember, Jason said filler games are really great. So everyone plays, you know, there's like three games that are going to take about 2 hours.
Yeah.
And then if somebody's game finishes in 45 minutes, oh, let's pull out a game that's going to play in 15 real quick.
Yeah.
Yep.
And we're going to just wait. And especially if it's something that not everyone's going to care very much about, you just play it to fill time until like, oh, look, they're done. Let's clean it up and go. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. So I have a lot of small box games, which can be that. Let's just pull this out and play this. Now, Steve mentions just some excerpts from our thread on Board Game Geek. I think for me, it is a party atmosphere. If it is a party atmosphere instead of a game night atmosphere, then you need to be prepared to play party games that are also good for large groups. That's what we were talking about earlier with the telestrations and those types of things.
Catchphrase, heads up.
Yeah, but he says also people need to be prepared to involve people in their games. Don't go to a large gaming get-together just to play the same people, play with the same people you normally would. Shake it up and make people who are new or without a set group feel welcome. So one... This actually just came to me. You could potentially say, okay, we don't have three copies of the same game. For whatever reason, everyone went to my house and I have a ton of games, but I don't have a lot of duplicate games. I sadly have some duplicate games.
That's actually a lie. Yeah.
I have some duplicate games. But what you can do is essentially say, okay, put your name in a hat and for this game, these four people are playing. For this game, these four people. For this game, for these four people.
I think that's a great idea, especially too if it's casual gamers who are like not really in their comfort zone.
Yep.
I actually like almost doing it demo style where you have like a leader for each game. So like Kitty's going to be leading the Arena of the Gods table and Chris is going to be leading the Terraforming Mars table and Eve is going to be leading the Ticket to Ride table and you pull the names and that way at least there's one person at every table who knows the rules for sure, who can help people out and make it go a little smoother.
And it kind of forces you to say, okay, everyone get together, we're drawing the names from the hat.
Yeah.
So you can take it from the social atmosphere of everyone's arriving, they're getting their drinks, grabbing some appetizers, shish kebabs, whatever might be coming up. We'll talk about like what good food is for these things in a little bit too. But then it's like this starting point. There's this break where now we're going from social night to game night.
I think that's great.
Everyone sit down. Let's go. And you can even do this with smaller groups.
Yeah.
Because seven, I mentioned, is kind of a bad number. Because you can play up to five in a lot of board games. Mm-hmm. Like your traditional board games, a lot of them now play to five, and that leaves two left over. You can break it up into four and three, but three's a little light. And
it's too close.
Yeah. And four's good. Like a lot of games play great at four.
Yeah.
I think there's some good three-player games, though. And if you're setting up the tables so you know what game is going to be the three-player game, that's easy to
do. Exactly. So maybe you set up a good three-player game and then a good four-player game, and then you draw the hats. Maybe there's one person, again, dedicated if not everyone knows the games, and then you draw the names for who gets to play where.
Yeah.
let people switch if they want. It's like, oh, wait, I'll trade you for this.
Yeah.
But it's like,
this isn't high school. You can trade partners. Yeah.
But you can have fun with it. And actually, you could use playing cards. You could basically say, you know, all the diamonds are going to this table, all the clubs are going to that table.
Yeah.
And that way, when you draw the cards, it's like you have this fun card that you can switch around or something.
Yeah. And it's like another game, too, to split up everybody. And it
gives you something to do with your old playing cards if you're done playing spades with them.
Spencer will never be done.
Never.
So we played some spades up in Minnesota. I'd like to say that we won.
Of course.
Another good party game.
Spencer's grandmother beats us every year.
Yeah, but doesn't she cheat?
Over again. It's not clear whether she cheats or not.
So yes.
It is his family, everyone. It's very unclear whether everyone is just messing with me. I don't know. It's very possible.
I'm going to make the assumption that they are.
Probably.
Another blurb. Terrence mentions that he agrees with everything Steve says, but he adds, I know when I'm going to a gaming event, I usually have one long game in me, and I want to play a few shorter games as well. As a host, it's a good idea for there to be shorter games for people to play if their game finishes before another table does, so they have something to do. So how we're talking about, we split up, we set up two games. Again, if it's the same game, they're going to end usually around the same time.
Yeah.
So that's an advantage of having the same game. But if you can't, then maybe Arena of the Gods is going to play for 45 minutes, where Ticket to Ride is going to play for 90. Mm-hmm. Then what you have is like, okay, here's a small game that's going to play in about a half hour. So when you guys are done with this, here's a bonus game that you can play afterwards. Because I think one thing, and I have an aversion to doing game nights for these exact reasons, where the night turns into a party and not board gaming.
Yeah.
But I think as soon as people stop playing games and get back into that social mode again, it's hard to pull them back into gaming.
So what's a way we can gamify pulling people back into gaming?
Oh,
I'm thinking like
we did it with
timers,
the party games.
Yeah,
I mean party games when people are socializing.
So you pull. It's easy to pull everyone from like socializing into a party game, and then easier from a party game to break into the smaller games.
You think so?
The more serious games.
I think so.
I found, and maybe I just don't give them enough credit, but I find that once you switch into a party game mode, that's usually where the night ends. It's like we've played Telestrations once. Okay, let's play it again.
Yeah.
Oh, crap. I know as soon as we play it again, we're going to play it a third time.
You're done.
And then after the third time, people are just like, okay, time to go.
Let's pick the words and make it dirty this time.
Yes. That was our last game in Telestrations. We're just going to make up our own things and just keep it interesting in any way we can.
So do you consider like social deduction games party games, or are those?
It is a weird cross-section for me.
Yeah.
So there are a few social deduction games. I do consider them party games, but I consider them kind of serious party games.
Yeah.
Like Telestrations, fun. You know,
just fun.
If you're not familiar with Telestrations, we've talked about it a few times, but essentially...
It's a really fun game.
It is a really fun game. You get a card, and that card has multiple words on it, but essentially you get a word, and you write that word down. Then you pass your booklet to the person to your right, and you get the word from the person from your left, and you draw that word. Then you pass that, and that person looks at the drawing and writes what they think that was, and you continue to flip pages until you get your thing back.
So it is telephone with illustrations.
So, telestrations. It is very fun.
Yeah.
And you go through it, and it can be very, very silly, and you start out with Superman, and you end up with jackrabbits on a holiday picnic.
Yeah.
That didn't actually happen, but I'm going to try to make it happen now.
I feel like it might have.
Yeah, it could have.
Chris wasn't there for the round we played at your house. That ended up with some... What was the saxophone? Somebody drew a saxophone, and it was not a saxophone. They did. Oh, it was a trombone. Like, it went from one instrument to another. They were like, oh, I didn't know what a saxophone was.
Well, see?
Yeah.
That works. Yeah.
Funny.
But I find that once you go into a party game, you tend to get stuck there. And to your original question with social deduction, I think the same thing can happen.
Yeah.
But social deduction, most of them. Werewolf is different because you're in this kind of loose, big circle. And since people are getting voted out, they tend to just go off and start side conversations.
Yeah.
Don't play Werewolf at a party that's not necessarily specifically for Werewolf.
Yeah.
Because you will lose people. And I've actually had people just like, okay, I'll see you guys later. And just leave. Witch Hunt is a good alternative. It's like Werewolf, but you stay active in the game the entire time. But more something more like Avalon or Resistance or yeah. Burke's Gambit, or there's tons of them now, non-elimination.
Yeah.
I think from that, if you're all sitting at a table, to switch over to a board game from that is a whole lot easier than from a party game.
Yeah.
We played, what was it, Where Words.
Yes.
And that was a really, I think that's a perfect party game.
It's a really good
party game.
It's a good party game. I think our problem with that, though, was that not everyone was really on the same page of how seriously they were taking it. I don't know.
That was them taking it seriously.
I don't know. Maybe it was just that I was the jerk. I don't know that I've ever been this person before. I was like the
guys,
we need to take this seriously.
No, that's you.
I mean,
it's like, oh, your first time.
Yeah, that's never happened before.
Apparently, I'm not very self-aware. Sorry.
So, Werewords is 20 questions with werewolves. Mm-hmm. And that's all the summary you really need.
Yeah.
You have a certain number of guesses before you give up the word. And the werewolves know the word, and the seer knows the word, and you're trying to...
The seer is trying to figure out who the werewolf is.
Yep.
And the werewolf wins if they don't get guessed and the word doesn't get guessed.
Or if they can figure out who the seer is, if someone does pick the wolves, they can guess the seer and have a chance to win that way too.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting, it's kind of like Insider, which is a game we've talked about before, which is really just 20 questions with a hidden person who knows the word, with a few more mechanics on top of it. But it is a really good party game. It's one of those party games that I really like.
And it's run on the phone, too.
Yep, it has an app to guess for the words. And the hardest words are just ridiculous. Like, I don't even know what this means.
Yeah.
So.
I actually had a really hard time. It was one of their easy words, but it was summer. And
Oh my gosh, you did so bad with it.
I did not do bad. You guys did bad. You were asking me bad questions. It went so off track so quickly.
But we guessed it.
Well,
with the help of the seer.
Thank goodness for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I actually think Werewords isn't terrible because you are sitting around a table and it finishes quickly.
And it's structured.
It's structured. You're following rules. You're doing it. So you can move from that to a... real game.
Yep. I like the term real game.
I didn't mean to do it.
Yeah. But it's a more structured game.
Yeah. Yes. It goes from the very loose games like heads up or catchphrase to more structure, which is easier to, it's always easier to go from more structure to more structure instead of really loose to very really structured.
Yeah.
So now Michael, basically, he goes to a local meetup where they have 25 people, and they tend to break up into smaller groups. Often the group wants to play Code Names or Werewolves, but there's other party games, but that isn't really the focus. I think once you get to a certain size, if you're, even 12, but, 13, 14, 15 plus, now you're forced to break up.
Yeah.
And now it's just a matter of making sure people know that they're there to play games and not to walk around and mingle. And it sounds so terrible. It's like, you're here to play board games, not to socialize. But it kind of, if that's what you're trying to set up is a game night, I think everyone, and this kind of goes back to just a few people that aren't there for the games can cause the whole thing to break down.
Totally. Just take everyone out of it. Because one person who's not paying attention distracts three other people. And then it's now half the group is just gone.
So what do we do with those people? Do we take them out back and have a balcony incident?
Kick them out. You're gone.
If you can't take this seriously, Kitty's going to scold you.
She basically did. That is what went down.
I did. Yeah. I turned full preschool teacher and was like, you guys need to pay attention. It worked out great. Everyone really likes me now still. Yeah, I'm really popular with this group of people. They're all totally my friends. No.
Three months later, Eve, we're happy to come over. Your sister going to be there? Because I might have something to do otherwise.
No, I did not scold them. We never got out Century Spice Road. We only played party games.
Yeah.
Because they were in a party mood. And, it was still fun. We still played more games than I play at just a party where we pull out games. It was definitely the focus of the night was to play, even if it was not serious, structured games.
But you were still playing games.
Yeah.
And people were doing that.
We played games pretty much from the start to the finish of the party. It was just not necessarily the serious type of game that I thought they might be interested in.
So I recently went to a board game party. Recently, a few months ago. And I brought a few games because it was a board game party.
I'd
bring them over. There were about 13 or 14 people there. So I'm like, oh, this is a good quantity. There were cookies. There were all kinds of snacks and beverages, and it was great. Everything looked fantastic. This particular group did not want to break up, so we ended up playing a 13-person game of Cards Against Humanity for 2.5 hours.
And
I was just a guest, so there wasn't a whole lot I could do about it besides just smile and nod and be like, oh no, this is one of the most fun things ever I've done. This is amazing. This is so much fun. What do you do? What do you do in that situation when you're at a party and it's like, okay, this isn't what I signed up for? Do you try to say, hey, two or three people that I can also see are in agonizing pain, want to come over here and play this game in the corner with me?
I feel like that is appropriate, like after the game, like after the first one.
But what if it never ends? Because they're not keeping score, so it never ends.
Oh, God.
That's the problem with not keeping score with those games.
Yeah, that's what my problem with catchphrases, too.
Well, when you're playing it with, family after dinner at Thanksgiving, I just think it's really fun.
Sure.
Make it go forever.
But if you
pull people in for a board game night and that's all you've got going on, I think it's perfectly appropriate to be like, I'm going to check out this other game. I'm going to split up my cards or put them back in the deck. Anyone want to join me for something different? I think that's okay to do. I would go with the, I have to go to the bathroom and just never come back.
Yep. I ate a lot of cookies. I'm going to be in there for a while.
Just ghost out of the game.
Yep. Yeah. Well, another thing that made this particular party an issue is it was a relatively small Chicago apartment. So they had a coffee table and two couches in the living room. That was the whole thing. So even if you were trying, you would literally had to have sat on the floor in the corner.
Wow.
And to be able to set something up. So if you're throwing a game party and you say this is a game party, you should probably have room for at least two games.
I think so.
Even if you need a card table and some folding chairs.
Yeah.
Set them up ahead of time.
And I think it's okay to expect a couple people to sit on a floor at a coffee table.
Yeah, sure.
As long as you're not playing we're going to play Twilight Imperium while you have to sit on the floor for 6 hours. That's not,
even something with lots of pieces. Yeah. Not quite as complicated. But
have you seen Twilight Imperium?
I've only heard about it.
I'm not sure it would fit on a coffee table.
I'm going to bring it out right after we're done recording.
Yes, please.
And then
makes Risk look low-key. Oh,
that's an understatement of the year. It makes Axis and Allies look...
Oh, God.
Well, it's on par with Axis and Allies. Takes up a little bit more space, though, I think.
It is a huge board.
Yeah. I'm so excited.
All right. One more bits of input from Sam. Let's see. He talks about how well the group knows each other as being a concern. If it's a social thing and there's not a lot of people who know each other, then you might end up having this mingling thing. But the other way could go, too. If people don't know each other, as long as you're the host that assigns people together, it's like, okay, you guys are playing this game. It might be a way to get people to know each other. So maybe over-familiarity is just as bad as no familiarity.
I think that's what the problem was at my most recent board game night.
Was over-familiarity?
Yeah.
And I think
kiddies,
it's...
follow the rules.
I know. I was like... I was the outsider there, and I was coming in with my judge's gavel, order, order, everyone. We are playing games tonight.
But that's why I like the idea of having captains for all the games, where they're not only in charge of the game, but kind of the conversation at the table and getting people familiar.
I think that's a great idea. And Sam also mentions games that are easy to play. So if you know that you're inviting some people over that aren't necessarily full gamers or people that are going to be the plus ones or, oh, you're having a party? Yeah, I want to come over. That type of thing. Having a game that's fun that you can get people into very quickly isn't bad. Century Spice Rose is a pretty good example of that.
Yeah.
You can teach that in 5 minutes and then play it. Splendor's another good example. Yeah. You can teach it. And Splendor's one where you can say, okay, the four of you aren't really serious about gaming. This is how you play Splendor. I'm going to go over here and play Twilight Imperium.
Yeah.
Have fun with your Splendor.
You get it. You can do it on your own.
And if you guys stop playing, it's just the four of you that are disrupting each other, not the entire game night.
And we can play our complicated. Yeah.
So actually, that's the trick. You don't push them off the balcony. That's we do not recommend pushing anyone off the balcony. But putting them at distract the kids' table.
Them. Yeah, give them a colored book, some crayons.
That is a totally valid thing to do. He asks a question. This is Sam. I haven't played Werewolf, but since many of these threads have, do you feel the group becomes more social over the course of the night and that the later games become possibly more fun than the easier ones, especially in convention situations, as people get to be more comfortable around each other? I can imagine accusing people you don't even know may be harder to do in the earlier rounds.
I totally agree.
You think as you become more comfortable, you're more comfortable accusing them? And
yeah, well, the one game night where I'm kind of like meeting my friend's boyfriend for the first time, and we were playing the Resistance, and like him and I were the spies. And it was so uncomfortable, and I like didn't know how to act, and I just felt so nervous. And he was like very visibly, you know, up to something, and everybody else knew, but like nobody would accuse him. And the next round, I was again the spy, and I like screwed someone over very clearly. Like I was not subtle about it, and they didn't say anything. And I'm like, really? Like, but then later in the night, you know, after you've been playing, you have a few drinks, and like. Everybody's like, you did it. It's you.
There's also, though, the too many adult beverages with social deduction games ends poorly.
Yes.
As I just, like, I was trying to figure out the rules of a new character in Werewolf one time when we were playing, and I was playing with people who were both more sober than me and more experienced werewolf players than me. And I'm like, but how does somebody know who I am? And then I was just like, oh. And I just like put down my card and walked away. It was bad.
Yeah. So I do think games like The Resistance, Burke's Gambit, any social deduction game, the very first time you play it, everyone needs to try to figure out the strategy at that point. Because you don't really know, should I be accusing this person? Should I be telling people I'm evil? Or should I not? Like, you're just trying to figure things out. So as you become more comfortable with the game, you will automatically become more comfortable with accusing people.
Yeah.
Now, when you have, say, seven people and an eighth person joins and that eighth person is new to Resistance, but the other seven people have played for a while, then that eighth person's just like, wait a minute, you're accusing me based on logic that I have absolutely no comprehension of whatsoever.
It's so intimidating to be that person.
Yeah. So that can be a problem too. And that's sort of a side effect to those really intense social deduction games.
Yeah.
It's sort of why I like games like Burke's Gambit, where there's a decent amount of mechanics involved, where it's like, I'm going to teach you the mechanics. You're good or bad. You know, good people want to do this, bad people want to do this. But now we play the mechanics and we let those be our decision factors.
Yeah.
It's less intimidating. So you may want to open with that for a social deduction game and then move to the harder stuff. And by harder, I mean not complication rules harder. I mean like the more like hardcore
tricky,
stuff.
Yeah.
Right. For Werewolf specifically, I think that game plays just as good in the beginning of the night as the end of the night, especially in a convention scene, because there are always going to be people who are like coming out and trying to instigate things.
Yeah.
And if you're not comfortable, you can just sit back and be quiet and just watch the action.
Yeah.
And by the time you get later on, you'll be like more and more comfortable as you go through.
Yeah.
I think you can, though, play with a group that's too familiar with each other. Like if you've played Werewolf a million times with the same group of like 10 people, those same 10 people over and over again, it just turns into like, okay, we're going to accuse Chris because I know that Chris is lying because his left eye twitched. And it's just like down to the, I know every little nuance of these people. Like it at some point becomes less fun.
It sort of came up a little bit in our burnout episode last week where it's like, I burned out on Werewolf. There was a certain game at Gen Con where I'm just like, I'm done. I can't play with these people anymore. I like them too much as people to have such intense emotional debates inside the game. And I just kind of walked away for a year. Like, just did not play the game at all. And
that's how I felt after my first game of Werewolf. I get so shouty.
I told you about this too. I was at a bachelorette party where they only wanted to play Secret Hitler for like, it was a weekend and it was like
weekend of Secret Hitler?
It really was.
Okay.
And it was like very intense. And three of the people in the group, they played it together all the time. So they just were really excited to play it with other people.
They're like new victims.
Yeah. But they, like the three of them kind of played it totally different than the way everyone else learned it. So they would get like really emotional and everybody else was like, oh, I don't really care about it.
Yeah. Well, Sydney's having kind of that debate now for her bachelorette party. It's like, yeah. I want to kind of have a game night, but I'm not inviting all gamers.
Yeah.
And I don't want to exclude people. So it's like, how do you balance that?
Just a weekend of Secret Hitler.
Exactly. So I'm going to let her know, which is great because she's Jewish and, you know, all about that game. So that's probably not going to happen.
Secret Hitler, but Hitler has to lose every time because yes. It's her weekend.
If you're Secret Hitler, you just put the mustache
throw
on
the game.
And everyone throws things at you.
Yeah.
No, that works out.
Weekend.
Just fine. I'm going to my list. We haven't actually checked any of my bullet points yet.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. We got distracted.
I rarely
something
do.
Something new and different for us.
So this is how this works, a little behind the scenes for Eve. I usually put like 5 or 6 bullet points to talk about just in case something like there's a lull or something.
Yeah.
But we hit them all anyway, just naturally. I just like to make sure that hit them all.
Are we going to talk about food now?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's our.
I got a big bone to pick with Cheetos.
Oh,
all right.
I thought it was going to be at me.
No,
I was like,
I just made fun of you before the show about that.
Yeah, I was a little scared.
No, Cheetos and Doritos and that type of chip they've got this reputation as like gamers eat Cheetos while they drink Mountain Dew and eat Cheetos. Cheetos are the worst food to have at a game night.
Yeah.
You leave cheese prints on everything.
Especially when it's your game. Yeah. You're like, do not.
It's fine for video games.
Yeah.
That's fine. Like your controller, you just wipe it off. It's good.
Don't touch my cards.
Don't do it. Mm-hmm. In fact, that's a good point in general. And we'll get back to more food suggestions. But if you are playing someone else's game, treat it like it's not your own.
Yeah,
treat it like it's a library book. Treat it with better care.
Be a Girl Scout. Leave it better than you found it.
Yes.
Organize those cards for them.
Like so many times I'm watching cards get curled up as people are like holding them in their hands and it's getting it's like just
dog-eared and bent.
Yes. Somebody cares about that game enough to invite you over to their house to sit down and play it. And nowadays, like I try not to be too OCD about it.
How many games do you have that are sleeved entirely?
But if I'm going to play a game with people and I'm going to play it more than once, I will sleeve it just because it makes it safer. Coasters, I never was a huge coaster fan, but like cups sweat and like things get wet. And when you put that down and then the cards go on top where the table was or the
we should plug RPG coasters again because they're so great.
Yes,
they're the wooden ones and they've got like cutouts in them so when your drink sweats it doesn't drip off the coaster onto the table. And they're fun game themed. You can get them personalized. Chris has his coaster.
I do. It's a dragon eye and it says at Game Master Chris on it.
They are not paying us to say these things. We just really like these coasters.
I will always tell you if somebody pays me for something or sends me something for free, that normally doesn't happen. But no. RPG coasters, check them out. They're really, really cool. He'll be at Gen Con this year, too. So he has a booth, and you can check him out there. They're actually cheaper to buy at Gen Con. I think they're like $8 a piece there. But if you get them online, they're like $10 plus shipping because he's doing them custom. But and you can get custom names on all of them, too. So they're really cool. But yeah, so use them.
Yeah.
So many times, I'm just like, I look across the table, and when you're at that angle, you can see where there's droplets of water on the table. But if you're next to it, the light, maybe you don't see it. And then all of a sudden, the cards start to float into it, or someone drips onto a card and doesn't pay any attention to it. Like, I immediately lunge over and like wipe off the card because it'll just.
It kind of ruins it if one is.
Yeah.
You know which card that
you're basically marking the card.
Yeah.
So. Be kind to other people's games.
Yeah.
Like, way nicer than you would be for your own.
Yeah.
Like, just,
Respect, respect, respect. Yeah.
Cheetos are bad. Anything that has a powder on it is bad.
Anything that's saucy.
Yep. And chips.
Yeah.
That has an oil on it that's even harder to get off your fingers.
Yeah.
So you're eating, you know, Lay's potato chips, dipping it in the ranch sauce, and then picking up some cards, marking them forever as disgusting. Don't do that. Fruit, vegetables, those are actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Again, they get drippy, so try to keep them away off the table, but they're also much more nutritious.
Yeah.
You know, you're not just...
I was just going to say, like, hard candies or fruit candies are great.
Yes. If you want to do...
Starburst.
Yeah, if you want to do... Oh, that's a perfect idea. Starburst, Jelly Bellies, you know, bowls of candy, hard candies, non-melty candies. Not M&M's. M&M's, they melt in your hand.
Yeah.
They're
supposed to melt in your mouth.
No, it's a lie. Yeah.
You end up with like rainbow hands. Yep. I mean, that's only if you like hold on to them for a really long time. Like, what kind of game are you playing that you're just sitting there with fistfuls of M&M's?
Sometimes you get...
Not even for fistfuls, yeah. too. Not even like, oh, we got one.
Sometimes you get stressed and you got those sweaty hands and now it's everywhere. Yeah, they have the blue M&M's are back now, so you can have blue games everywhere. The point I'm trying to get to, though, is candy's good.
Skittles.
Nothing with wrappers.
Yeah.
Like, wrappers are a pain because you're unwrapping it and then you have to find it for, like, a trash bag or can or something like that. Mm-hmm. If some things, I mean, Kitty's looking at me like, but I like my stuff with my wrappers.
Yeah, because I'll sit there and I've got, like, my own mini game then because I'm eating Starburst and I'm turning them into a chain as I play.
Starburst and then I end up with those Starburst
wrapper chains like 3 feet long that I'm like, what am I supposed to do with this now? I'm an adult.
It's childhood. All Kitty did.
Yeah. Yeah, she's your sister. I don't know.
Not a surprise.
What else? Like sandwiches and things like that, I think are good for a break. It's like,
pizza is also good. Order a big round of pizza, eat it. Everyone clean your hands. Back to the games. Yeah. Yeah.
Don't bring food back to the table.
Yeah. We did kebabs last time because you don't need a ton of utensils. You just gotta...
Did that work out?
It did. It took a little longer, but...
The only thing is if one of the hosts is willing to stand and grill kebabs for part of the game, miss some of the games, that's, you know...
Yeah.
Well, another thing you could do, like thinking the kebabs, you could grill a bunch of meat and vegetables.
Yeah.
So, like, you don't even have to grill it, but you can, like, pan fry it. So you dice up some meat, dice up some vegetables, pan fry it, put them on a plate and toothpicks.
Yeah.
So then you use, like, little hors d'oeuvres. You never have to touch the actual food.
Exactly.
It just goes from the plate, boom, and then you have the toothpick. You set that aside on a plate in the trash directly, not on the table next to a card. It's not a counter.
And that's nice, too. Like, the apartment that we have... it's kind of like, you know, big open floor pan. So we have the island where we can put all the food and then it's not
on the tables where you're trying to play games. Yeah.
Yep. And plates and napkins.
Yeah.
Like, just in case.
We did have one kind of faux pas at this party where I made a sangria that was a little too strong, I think, to introduce as everyone's first drink. So I think that's where Kitty's frustration came from.
I was the only one not drinking the sangria.
Yeah.
It was really good sangria, and it made the games a lot more fun for everyone else.
I wasn't in the mood for sangria.
Yeah. it is a concern. Like, having adult beverages is fine.
Yeah.
But you have to be careful because if you drink too much too early, it's not a game night anymore. And it really just immediately will degrade to party games, if that.
Yeah.
You want to have more of a social drinking level.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, maybe a glass of wine an hour.
Yeah.
Our mother's rule is one drink per hour with food.
Yeah.
Can you tell how many times we've heard that?
But the sangria, you know, you can have one glass of it and it's like... Four glasses.
And the ironic thing is it is my mother's recipe.
Yeah.
And it will knock you out.
Because if you're drinking one drink of these per hour, you're
dead by the end of the night. I think you encountered the sangria at my rehearsal dinner.
I don't recall it.
No one does.
All right. Any other food suggestions before we call this a show?
I don't think so. Just stay away from sticky, saucy, powdery foods.
Cubes. Or if you have them, to serve them separate. Yeah.
Cube cheese is good.
Yes. I love cube cheese.
Anything you can serve with a toothpick.
We got these little meatballs. Mini bowls and little mini forks too. And those are good. We did Brussels sprouts for one. And it was really surprisingly good gaming food.
Well,
Eve, I love Brussels sprouts.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
You should plug your podcast really one more time.
Yeah. Check us out. Fresh Baked Books. We're on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook.
Everywhere you can find your podcast. Yes. Everywhere you can find our podcast.
Yes, it looks, our picture looks a lot like your picture. You'll recognize it.
Illustrator, Tristan did our picture as well. So check us out on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, all those places.
And I don't think we said what it was. Basically, you guys read a book. Oftentimes, what do you guys call it? Like modern fantasy? What is your...
We read a lot of contemporary romance. We read some historical romances. I think he's looking for magical realism.
That's
realism. I couldn't remember either. I'm laughing. I'm like, what is it?
You guys say magical realism so many times. I'm just like, okay.
We really love magical realism.
We do, but we read other books.
We do.
A lot of cozy mysteries.
Yeah. Cozy mysteries, too. Yeah, those are fun.
And the idea is you read the book, you talk about it a little bit, and then you talk about food that was made in the book, and then you guys make something from the book or inspired by the book, and then talk about the recipe.
So our latest episode is about The Girl Who Chased the Moon by Sarah Addison Allen, and we made a hummingbird cake, which I loved, and Eve was kind of about.
Well, I like it because we sometimes get the leftovers down here while we're playing games.
Oh, yeah, I have to get my plate back.
So, yes, actually, we have a couple of your plates. And so it's always handy, but you guys should do something that's like, oh, this is board game approved.
Yeah.
Most of your stuff is not. That's a great idea. I would say it's moist and frosting and cake and
it really is.
Messy, but.
We'll invite you up for an episode and you can.
All right.
You did pick a book, tell us what we're baking, and we'll have
ginger
you.
Ginger snaps.
That, oh, yeah. Those are really good.
Yeah.
That was
cookies
one of our
make
first
a pretty
episodes.
Decent, if they're not like dripping in oil, make a pretty good snack. So, all right. That is about as post-topic section as we get. I will plug our Patreon. We have giveaways all the time. Every month we're giving away something. And if you're a patron, you're automatically entered in our contests. So if you want to become a patron and just support the show, you can go to tabletopgametalk.com/Patreon. Now you have me thinking pastry. /Patreon. Patreon. P-A-T-R-E-O-N. And now we get to listen to Kitty try to do the outro.
Thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So consider leaving us an iTunes review. Email us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. Finally, a huge thanks to our patrons, Emil Jiljam, Shane Poole, George, Adam Harrison, Sam from New York, Tom Bly, Jason Strong, Terrence Miltner, Steve Seitz, Alex Brown, Michael Ohl, Josh Arntz, Trevor Olson, Brian Arnold, Sean Kelly, Joseph Lee, John Merkel, Daniel Shepard, C. Marie, Rudy Liu, Benjamin Heimowitz, Jerry Huang, Mike Smith, Stefan Phillips, Caleb O'Brien, John Lewis, and Jennifer Engelbrecht. Until next week, when we celebrate our 50th episode, by looking back and answering your questions, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night. So, Eve, we do a little bit of talking after the credits.
Chris forgot to tell you.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think anyone listens to it, though. So I'm going to say it right now. If you say, I heard this from after the credits on episode 49, 5 bonus entries into the contest this week.
Whoa.
Da, 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 da. Good night. Yay.